Oh, this is exciting. This has been like, in my mind, years in the making. I was like, I know one day I'm going to talk about this, but I just don't know when. Hi, guys, and welcome to a very special, very exciting episode of Tea Talk. So I am here today with my great cousin. That's the title, right? You would be my great cousin.
Sounds good.
I think that's the title. My great cousin, Miss Mary Owen, who is also the daughter of Donna Reed. Now, this is something that I haven't talked about too much on my channel, but if you've been following closely for the last 12 years, which I literally can't believe I've been making videos for 12 years now, wild. You've heard me mention it before that I am related to Donna Reed. And so this is the relation. Donna is actually my great aunt. So my dad's dad was Donna's brother, or Mary's
Oh,
mom's brother. I
wow.
always have a hard time explaining family relations. Hopefully that all made
It's like you,
sense.
I know, it's like you need a flow chart,
Yeah, exactly.
right?
It's a little confusing about faces, but hopefully you get it. So I'm very excited to be talking to Mary today. And this has been years in the making. I was just saying that to Mary. Like, I always knew we were going to have this heart-to-heart conversation about our family, and to be able to just share this with you guys is really special. And I've really realized in recent years, and part of that honestly was going to that theater to see It's a Wonderful Life with you in Nashville. I really realized how much not only It's a Wonderful Life has meant to people, like how much it's really touched people's lives, but also how much Donna meant to people. And so this is a conversation I'm excited to have. We're going to talk about personal stuff, personal life. We're going to talk about It's a Wonderful Life because this is actually the 75th anniversary of the movie, which, how is that possible? Where does time go?
I
It's
don't know.
wild. So I'm really excited. So everybody, round of applause for Miss Mary Owen.
Well, I'm excited to be here because I really have enjoyed your progression and the things that you talk about and that we're related. And I love your dad and I loved your grandpa, my uncle Keith, and yeah.
Yeah, I was just telling Mary I watched a video this morning that's on YouTube that somehow I had managed to miss. I hadn't seen it. But it's called, is it called This Is Our Life or This Is Your Life? That's what it's
This is your
called.
life.
This
Yeah.
Is Your Life. And it's a show, I guess, that existed in like the 60s
Yeah.
that they would kind of bring family members of different celebrities onto the show and or people that impacted them in their life. And I haven't, I mean, I obviously haven't seen my grandpa since he passed away when I was in like fourth grade. I was very young. And I'd never seen my great grandpa. And it surprised me. It made me very emotional to see, wow, like family, like he had my grandpa, which had my dad, which had me, and now I have my son, and just that bloodline. It's
Yeah.
just, it's wild to see family. So I'm very excited to be talking to you. So I guess we'll just open it up. I kind of want to talk about kind of personal stuff. What was it like? This is a corny first question, but we're just going to lay it out corny. What was it like to have Donna Reed or Donna Bell Mullinger as a mother?
Well, I don't, it's an interesting question because in a way I don't know that there's anything like it, to have a celebrity for a mom. And then of course my dad was in the business too. He was a producer and a really big behind the scenes guy. So to grow up with two parents, both parents in the business was difficult, I'll be honest. My mom was a working mom back in the day when that was not ordinary like it is now. And so in a lot of ways she was quite ahead of her time. But by the time I was born, her film career was over and her television show was about a year and a half from starting. So each that show was ran for 8 years, 275 episodes, and if you do the math, it's about 39 episodes per season. So they worked from September to May, and she was gone at 6 in the morning, and oftentimes not back till after dinner. And, you know, I
Wow.
had a nanny I didn't really care for too much. She was, I mean, from my mother's perspective, she was definitely a good nanny. But
Yeah.
from my perspective, you know, I was just, watched too carefully, and she wasn't my mom.
So she was watching you. You mean like she was very tough love type of thing, and she wasn't your mom.
Yes. And she wasn't my mom. I think that was just more to the point. And she was older. So she was not a young mom. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, she was more a disciplinarian. But
You mean
the rest
Donna
of my,
was
no, the nanny.
the nanny was. Gotcha. Okay. The
Yeah,
do yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. Although, since we're talking about age, my mother was also ahead of her time because she had me when she was 36. Which, you know, in
Wow.
1957,
That was later.
that was out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She really wanted another kid because my siblings are much older, and they're almost, I think when I was growing up, they were almost like aunts and uncles.
Wow. I don't know because I don't know your siblings. So I don't know that I realized how many siblings do you have?
So there's four of us.
Okay.
So my sister Penny is the oldest, and she's 12 years older than I am. And then
Wow.
Tony is 11 years older. And then Tim is 8 years older.
Wow. And your dad's name
Yeah.
is Tony too, right?
Yes.
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 So
Yeah.
you were born right before she started the Donna Reed Show,
Yeah.
right?
I was about a year and a half.
Which your dad produced, right?
Yeah. So what happened was after she won the Oscar in 1954 in From Here to Eternity, you'd think her career would just skyrocket, but she ended up in a lot of B Westerns. And not only, you know, some of them are good. I happen to like Westerns because I love horses. But,
Hey.
you know, they're all kind of, they're B movies.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
she didn't enjoy it at all. So they started their own production company, kind of like Lucy and Desi had done previously. And they made a couple of movies together and then decided maybe to try television, which, you know, was still relatively new. And they had different ideas, like maybe she'd be a spy for the FBI, or she'd be, I think one of the ideas would she was be an elevator operator in the Chrysler building. So each week, each floor would be, you know, the storyline, what was going on that floor.
Oh,
But
that's funny.
yeah, that would be strange, right?
Yeah. Those are both very interesting ideas.
But then she had been in Iowa for there was a beautiful promo photograph of her sitting on a wall with Karen holding a goat, and then Tony, Penny, and Tim, who are all kind of close in age. And it's beautiful, it's color, and she looks, it's really iconic. And my dad had that on his desk, and someone said, "Well, why doesn't she play a wife and mother?" And my dad agreed because he knew she was also so good at that. And so that's how they started the show. My dad got all the money together. I mean, he was really the principal
Wow.
architect of the show. And that's one of the reasons
Wow.
why it's so good, is because it was their show.
Yeah, they really, it wasn't like executives running everything. They were the ones really hands in putting it together.
Making all the decisions and hiring and firing. Yeah.
Wow, isn't that interesting that they were toying around with these ideas that were more like outlandish and
Yeah.
kind of wild? And
Yeah.
then they settle on, you know, what they know and what so many people relate to and know, and that's what sticks.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting because it's right, like it'd be sort of a conservative format, but I think what makes the show interesting is that it's really Mother Knows Best, and it's got my mother's name on it,
Yeah.
and she is always involved in making the decisions. And there's humor too. I mean, she has a sense of humor about herself too. There's
Yeah,
and so even though it's from mother's perspective, she's very involved. So it's not wishy-washy, you know, which it
yeah.
could have been.
Yeah. Exactly. I think something that really strikes me when I watch the show is how good of an actress she is. Like, it's really phenomenal to see. Because the writing has changed so much on television and in movies. So, and obviously the camera work, but there's nothing about her performance that is like corny or cringe. It's very nuanced. It's very layered. Like she does so much with her face without being over the top. It's really phenomenal. I'm actually getting chills thinking of it because I didn't really know that until recent years. Oh yeah, my aunt was Donna Reed and she was in It's a Wonderful Life. And I really feel like it's in these last 3 to 5 years where I've watched more of the show. And then obviously, like I said, going to the theater in Tennessee, I'm like, oh my gosh, like she was really talented. And the depth in her performance, like we said, it could have been kind of shallow or I don't, yeah, shallow is a good word. And instead she comes across very deep and layered.
And that there's so much good chemistry between the family, her husband and the kids. And I think that accounts for a lot too. And also just it's tight. The writing's really good. I think a lot of the episodes you don't necessarily predict how it's going to end. And she took her role of speaking to the American family very seriously. I mean, if there was a choice to go funny or dramatic, she typically did not choose the funny. She typically chose to go dramatic. So I think that also makes the show. I mean, I love the show. I watch it every now and then, and I just think it holds up really well.
It really does. So, I mean, side note that's not a side note, kind of looping back to the beginning. What a trip, I guess that must have been to, like you said, have a nanny, not necessarily be raised full time by Donna, and then to see the show. That's her whole, like, that's the whole thing, right? As her being a mom. Did you spend, I mean, how trippy was that? Did you spend a lot of time on the set? Like, what was that like? I don't know. That's a vague question. I'm just thinking about what a trip that must have been.
So I mean, so part of the problem with it was our lack of privacy as a family. Even though, my father loved the business, like I said, he was the behind the scenes guy, and he it was 24/7 for him. My mother, when she came home, she really tried to close the door and be a mom. Now, when you have your own television show, that's, I think the wheels were still always turning with her because, she had to memorize lines and,
Yeah, it's a
she had
lot.
a whole cast and crew to be responsible for. But when she would, we'd go to the grocery store or try and do something normal, then she'd be asked for autographs and such. And she was always so gracious about that. But as a kid, it was infuriating. I didn't want to share her, and that's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, you wanted to just be able to go to the grocery store and be
Exactly.
normal, quote unquote, for lack of a better phrase.
Just and so that part was difficult, and I know that she knew that was difficult, but I mean, what can you do about it? You have to be gracious to fans, and of course she always was. And but we she and she was also I think this is important to know about my mother, that she was a very private person. Even though she was so successful, and once you're on the small screen, you're kind of everywhere. She didn't really ever, I don't think she ever went on a talk show. I don't think she believed in that. She just really tried to keep, yeah. I don't remember talking to her about it, 'cause still I was pretty little, but I know that she, I think she did not believe in those, and that she really just respected her need to be private.
That's very interesting. So she just really loved the art of creating a story and delivering that.
And I really think that just made me think that she was really playing grandma in a lot of ways, because my mother never had the kind of life that she depicted on the show.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, so like playing pretend, making this world that she wanted to make. Wow. So you were one and a half-ish when the Donna Reed Show came out, and it ran how long again?
8 years,
8
1958 to
years.
1966. Yeah.
So do you have any memories? Were you ever on the set hanging out, or was it mostly, yeah, you were. So you do remember it.
I do. I mean, truth,
Yeah.
boring, take after take after take. But her hairstylist, Trudy, she had a big cat, glasses and
Of
big
course
hair.
she did.
And I had, she was so much fun to hang out with, right? So she
Oh.
was such a sweetheart. And her makeup artist, Clay Campbell, who she had all these people, the crew, most of the crew for all 8 years because she was so wonderful to work with. But
Wow.
I remember just hanging out with them a lot because, as a, also as like a 2 or a 4 year old, like watching them film was just not that exciting, but everyone was
Totally.
so sweet with me,
Yes, I mean film is it's slower paced anyways. I remember growing up always love I mean I loved the arts from when I was very little, but I preferred theater over camera work because camera felt like a whole lot of hurry up and wait. Like, okay, hold, you just wait right there. Like, how long do I have to wait here and how many times are we going to do this? Like, it's a real dedication, and I can only imagine since they were running the show, there's probably another level of like, I don't want to say perfectionism, but they know what they're go they knew what they were going for.
Well, no, you can't say perfectionism because the one thing we did do as a family every week was watch the show together. And
Oh,
on
that's
Thursday nights,
sweet.
it was sweet,
Yeah.
except my mother was a perfectionist. I mean, of course she was because that was her show. So
Yes,
she would
yes.
see all the flaws, and so that was painful.
So she's like picking it apart, like, oh, that's not the take I wanted. Oh, that angle. Oh,
Or
that's
like the line should have been,
so funny.
I mean, I'm sure we would be the same way.
Oh, I mean, totally. And unfortunately, I mean, this is my opinion. It doesn't mean it's true, but for me personally, sometimes I feel like no matter how many times you try to do something and make it just right, it's like it's never quite what you wanted because your vision always ex like you're always going further and then your talent catches up and it's like you're always reaching. Man, so do you remember now looking back as an adult, do you ever see episodes and you're like, oh, I remember being there for that? Or like, I remember a funny moment that happened on that episode. Or is it too far? I mean, you were pretty young. That's young. Memories before the age of 10 is, I can hardly remember memories before the age of 10. But I don't know because you were filming so much. I mean,
I don't actually. I do remember Leslie Gore was in the very last episode singing, it's my party. I can cry if I
yes.
want. And I remember that. I remember she was so lovely and she had a beehive hairdo.
Oh.
And I just remember, kind of crushing out on her. I just thought she was the best and she couldn't have been sweeter with me,
Wow, that's so funny. So you have a brother that's around your age, right?
Tim is 8 years older.
Oh, Tim is 8 years older. You said it for some reason. I thought he was closer to your age. So he was in the house too when all of this was going on.
Yes, Tim was, but he was older, so he would have been a teenager. And I don't remember him being on the set. He was probably, like in high school and,
Doing his own thing.
I know I know this is going to sound weird, but I almost feel like in a certain way, like an only child because they were so much older. And so I don't remember them being as involved. Although my other brother, Tony, so my father at one point asked all of us if we wanted to be on the show. I'm
Huh.
sure I was probably too young, but Tony said yes, and he's in a couple of episodes
Oh,
towards
how
the end, the
funny is
later
that?
seasons. Yeah, and he's
Wow, what
good.
an experience.
I think he really enjoyed it. So I don't remember my siblings being on the set and I so much.
Interesting. The Donna Reed Show, 8 years. They came up with that concept together. In a lot of ways, it was like Donna creating a, I mean, not necessarily a childhood, maybe more of like a motherhood that she didn't get to live, but that she felt like was beautiful and ideal. And you got to watch that on the screen, and now you get to look back as an adult and see that. And I just keep thinking what a trip that is to not actually live that life, but to see it played out. And then to go to a grocery store as a kid and it's like, this is my mom, and be doing the autographs, and just what a whirlwind that was. And you said she had already won her Academy Award for From Here to Eternity. So she was very well known by this point.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, in those days, though, there wasn't VHS and that kind of thing. So if you didn't see the movie in the theater, you probably didn't see the
Interesting.
movie. And because
That
I didn't
never
see It's a
occurred to me. That totally makes sense.
Because I didn't see It's a Wonderful Life until I was in college and it was playing at a local theater in LA. And my best friend said, you have to see this movie. Your mother's in it. And I was like, I don't know anything about her film acting. I just
Wow.
know her job is to go to the studio every day and do the show. So that was also a huge revelation because she's 25 years old in the movie. I'd never seen her that young. And
Wow.
I got it that she was so talented, right? That, she's like mesmerizing in that movie. And
Yes.
I had no idea. So anyway,
So
I know this is,
no, it's not. It's amazing. This is what I want. So when you say you were in college when you saw It's a Wonderful Life and you're like, oh, all I knew is that she's going to the studio. Are you talking about in your past, or are you saying that because she was doing Dallas at the time, so she was still working?
no, that was before Dallas. It was just my
That's just your
well
vision
at
of
the
her.
Yeah. Well, at the time when I was in college, she was doing probably like maybe she wasn't working, but I was out of the house. I was in college, and my memories were just of her as, from the show. And since there wasn't VHS or really any way, and they didn't really show old movies on television too much either, so the opportunity to be well versed in film would be difficult unless you actually went to the theater to see the movies when they came out.
Yeah, that is such
So,
you
yeah.
saying that. I'm like, oh my gosh, that totally makes sense. And that's kind of a segue, not that I'm trying to necessarily leap there yet, but we can. That makes me think about how I had heard that the reason why It's a Wonderful Life really started picking up traction was because, like, 30 years later, it became like syndicated and was put on television. So television served it to the masses every year in like starting in like the 70s or something like that. Is that true? Am I making that up?
No, it's mostly true. What happened was the somebody forgot to renew the copyright, so it fell into the public domain.
That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And that's what brought it back to life and made it get rediscovered, the small screen. So yeah, it was the late 70s, early 80s that it was on all the time. I mean, you couldn't even flip through at Christmas time any channel without seeing it on.
What
And
a
it was kind of like
beautiful,
annoying.
yeah. What a beautiful, wild stroke of good luck and bad luck, depending on who you're talking to.
Just completely random, just one clerical error. And that's, this is what we've got now, 75 years of a movie that just continues to grow in popularity.
I was just going to say it's amazing because it's an error and a mistake, but also if you want to see things through the lens of positivity and nothing being a mistake or whatever, it's like that's really beautiful. That's what allowed it to get this cultural, I don't know, momentum and really speak to people. It's a message that is so important. I mean, I was watching some guy review the movie the other day from like last year. I had no idea. I mean, I started to realize this, like I said, in Tennessee when I came to the theater. But people, I mean, that movie has impacted people so deeply, and people are still watching and reviewing it and talking about just what a stellar film it is and how touching it is. So that's really amazing. Just a clerical error gone horribly wrong slash right.
Yeah, I
75
know.
years.
I know. I mean, there's so few movies. I mean, it's interesting when you think about, like, I'll watch a movie two or three times, but usually the second or third time, it's like, okay, well, it was really good the first time. But it's a wonderful life, just gets more. I mean, you always see something different. I do. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen it, many, many times, but it never gets old.
Well,
Yeah.
I think part of why it never gets old, which is kind of what you and I were talking about before, just what's even going on culturally right now, is that I think that most people can relate to that feeling of why am I here? Like, what's the point? Do I bring anything to the table with my relationships? Would it even matter if I was gone? Like, that's such a, I think, such a universal feeling for people at different stages in their life. And I think that that's a big part of what makes it timeless is that conversation in general.
Yeah, right. Because it is, I mean, when you think about it, it's a very depressing movie. It's pretty dark and right. And what brings value, to your life.
Yes, and how all people are kind of interconnected. We all really need each other. You know,
Yes.
that's something that I read that article that you sent over from the woman. I don't know if that's bad for me to mention it. I mean, you sent
No,
it to me,
no,
the
no.
Mary problem and
Yeah.
her talking about, and I can, okay, so here's the thing. I'm a little bit of a child of, I'm like a postmodernist, and I hate to admit it if that's how we're gonna word it. I'm a little bit of a relativist. So I can kind of like see things in lots of different ways. I can kind of see what she's saying. Basically, Mary sent me an article saying it was called the Mary problem. And basically, the woman says that her problem, and you tell me if I'm encapsulating this wrong. It's been a crazy week. My sister's getting married this week. I'm a little all over the place. But basically, the gist of what she said is that at the end of the movie, when Jimmy Stewart sees that, you know, okay, I keep calling them by their real names, but Donna is like living as a librarian basically and didn't ever get married because he didn't exist. And they're saying that's not what would have happened. Like, she would have married the other guy in town. She would have had a nice life. It's insulting to insinuate that because she didn't marry him, her life fell apart. And I read that and I thought, okay, I can kind of, if I can kind of see what you're saying, but I also thought, I mean, how do you know what their love was and how people interact with each other? Like, in theory, sure, if I had never married Dan, I would have married someone else. In theory, I would have been fine. But on some other, I mean, if it's all theory anyways, on some other level, Dan has made me so much of who I am. And we're so interconnected and we need each other. Like, we love each other. We don't need each other, but we need each other. Like, we're all so connected. And I think that that's kind of the way that I took it. Like, they're so, and they were in, connected from childhood. That was a ramble, but I
Well,
just.
I think I think what the also what she was trying to say, because I think, it's fun to kind of say that It's a Wonderful Life is nearly a flawless movie. I mean, they're just, there's so many great character actors and faces, and it's not like a Hollywood glamorous, kind of thing. And I think for a lot of people, the one flaw is that Mary Hatch would have been a librarian. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think that her depiction when she comes out is that she's kind of mousy and, a spinster. And I think what was interesting about that article was that not that I don't know that she would have married Sam Wainwright, because, in that very first scene, she tells George, I'm going to love you till the day that I die. And kind of the article is that she chose him. And the fact that he didn't exist, there was nobody like George for her to marry, that she would be interested in. So she chose to not be married. And that to me was like so fantastic, because I do think the way she's depicted there in that just briefly, it is a negative. But I thought the article made it sound like, well, this was her choice, and she chose from the very beginning, all throughout her life, she wanted. When I first saw the movie, well, first of all, it's interesting that you say you're a postmodernist, because more that way too, and not generally a nostalgic person. And so I always have a little bit of an attitude when I sit down to watch It's a Wonderful Life, but it always just slays me. It's such a good movie,
I know.
right?
I have to say, I'm regrettingly like I don't like that I'm a postmodernist. I don't think it's good for everything to be relative, but I just notice in my reactions and engagement with the world, I'm like, oh man, I tend to be more like relativist in a lot of ways. Anyways, go on. So it slays you when you watch it.
I mean, I try to think that it's not going to get to me, or something, that I've just seen it so many times. But when I first saw it, and what really still strikes me, especially, the what builds up to the end, where this community comes together and takes care of people. And I think, that was kind of more going on like in the 60s and the early 70s. It didn't matter who you were or whatever, that there was this feeling that you would be helped by the community. And I feel like we've kind of lost that.
Oh my gosh, definitely. I mean, that's going to be hard for me to not go off on a whole separate rant. I will say, getting away from larger cities and honing in on things that are really important to me, like things that I'm very passionate about, has allowed me to see that that still exists, but it's like it's not necessarily in the larger cities, in my opinion. That's not what I saw. I found that it was harder in like big areas with, 6, 7 million people. It's just life was different back then. I think, the population was smaller. I think people were maybe, what would be the word? They were united on some more similar values. And now, and part of that, I think, is the whole postmodernist thing, right? It's like there's so much relativism. But I think that that really does represent something that a lot of people are craving. And I think that it can hopefully be found again. I'm starting to see it more. Like I said, in my life, as like my values become more honed in, and even living in a smaller town, and it's kind of a trip coming from a big city where you're like, is this real? Like, are you really that supportive? Because you get a little bit like questioning when you're like raised in a big city. Like, what do you want? Are you just gonna disappear? Like, what's happening? But that movie encapsulates that, and that's yet another thing I think that a lot of people are missing and craving, and I think that's probably how community should be,
And that is part of, why it's almost like a, I think, what my audience is now, when I introduce the movie in New York, are mostly in their 20s and early 30s.
Oh, isn't that
So they,
interesting?
yeah, and they, they've had this tradition of watching it with their family, and they're keeping the tradition. And I just feel like it's just a whole experience. It's almost, it's at the end of the year when you tend to be reflective anyway, thinking about the past year and looking ahead to the new year. And I think that movie just really is a great ritual too, to kind of get you thinking about that, and also feeling like, yeah, I wish there was more of a, I was part of something that was bigger.
Yeah, that community aspect can give you that feeling, that bigger feeling of taking care of more than just yourself. And they really represent that when everybody comes together to care for him. Okay, you saw the movie for the first time when you were in college at a local theater in LA.
The new art, yeah.
And were you just, did you just walk out? Were you like, what? This is a totally different side of my mom, or like just mind blown.
I was mind blown. I was pretty mind blown. I mean, especially that first scene on the dance floor. Like you were talking earlier about, even in the show, like how good she is with her eyes, and even not using words. And I just, and I use the word a lot, that luminous. She's luminous in that, and then she was just so good throughout the whole movie. And it was, I mean, of course, Mary Bailey isn't that far from, let's say, Donna Stone, and also I think, because Frank Capra wanted like Jean Arthur and then Ginger Rogers to play Mary Bailey, and thank God they weren't available. But I mean, growing up in Crawford County in rural Iowa, her values were to play Mary Bailey were, already there.
Yes, that was
And
already a part of who she was.
yeah, so it wasn't like she was strange to me. She was familiar, but it was just a whole other thing that I'd never seen before and experienced, yeah.
Yeah, what I mean, that's a trip, side note in general. Like, don't go on a tangent, Nikki, but people being born, right? Like, having my son and looking at him and being like, I lived this whole other life before you even got here. And you'll never know. I mean, he'll know from an observational place, kind of like you do with your mom, like looking back and seeing that movie, like, wow, she did that before I was even a thought. Like, she lived this whole other life. And that's just got to be so weird because not only is it, I just think weird in general. Like I said, like looking at my son, like, you'll never know this whole other life I lived before you got here. But she did this thing that's made such a cultural impact and is like I said, like we were saying, the storyline is so relevant. And I think even almost more so today, because of what we were saying in regards to people not really feeling, a lot of people not really feeling like they have a tight-knit community. And then also, like we said, this whole idea that I think most people have probably battled with, of wondering if their life even matters and if there's even really a reason for them to be here. Like, do they matter? Are they part of the community? Do they bring anything? So yeah, that's just got to be such a trip to see that. And it's like, wow, that was way before I was even a thing, and not seeing it until college.
And just how strong Mary Bailey is too. Like she never wavered, and
Yes.
she's always kind of saving George. She's got the honeymoon money to save the run on the bank, and just all the disappointments in his life. And but
And I think that that was beautiful. Like, I don't know if I was reading it incorrectly, so once again, you tell me. But in that article, I almost felt like that was being painted not as a negative, but like, she was so strong. Don't you see that? And I thought, well, yeah. I mean, in my mind, I think that's what can be so beautiful in marriage and a relationship. Oh, a car alarm is going off and it's off. Like, I don't think of a traditional woman, if that's how we want to use it, as like a doormat, like just rolling
Right.
over. It's like it's a
Right.
partnership. I think that my husband needs me, and I need my husband. And it's
Yeah.
not like, oh, he's taken care of everything and I'm just or vice versa. It's bad if I'm like spearheading. We're a partnership. And so I feel like I always saw Mary's strength as a good thing and as like part of the partnership and part of why they worked so well together, was her strength that she brought to that relationship.
Yeah, I agree definitely. It is interesting over period of time, because I think for a long time, it was like the movie stars Jimmy Stewart and Mary Bailey is just of her time, and it's too bad she wasn't, I don't know, more modern or something. And now she's a lot of people are asking me questions about her role and things like that, and how some people think she's the protagonist of the movie. So I love it. I mean, that just goes to show how much universality is in the film, and that it's just not, it could be, it lend itself to so many different interpretations, and that makes it feel like a piece of literature. It's just so, it has so much going on, and there's so much depth there. And
Yes, and people can take so many different things from that one story, which you can't say of all films. So that's amazing. So 75 years. Wow.
Yeah,
So go on.
I don't know if you know, and you probably don't want to add this, but it's been a real problem for me. Because it's the 75th anniversary, I don't know if you know who Fathom Events are.
I heard about this from you, that they're like not letting smaller theaters play the
So
film.
I saw someone sent me an article about a small theater in Plymouth, Michigan. population, like, I don't know, not that many, 8,000. And they have been going to that movie at Christmas since, like 2004. So they protested. There were 1,000 people in the street with signs saying, "We are Bedford Falls. What would Jimmy Stewart say?" It was the so fantastic. So I reached out to them and found out about this situation. And I said, "Look, I don't support this at all. I mean, this is a destination seasonal film. It's just there's been all this momentum that people now show it in local small theaters." So Fathom eventually caved and made some exceptions.
I don't know that I knew that that was the end of that, that they gave in and they said, okay, fine.
They did. There are some, like when I was in Seneca Falls for the It's a Wonderful Life Festival, there were a couple of people who came up to me and said, "You know, we have this organization and we were told we couldn't show the film this year." But I would say, in general, a lot of small theaters around the country have been able, but they do take 75% of the ticket sales.
Oof. We
So to
don't like
me, this
that,
is like
Fathom.
straight out of Potter. You know, this is like,
That's exactly it. That's really sad, unfortunate. And part of the reason why it's unfortunate is it's not that surprising. That's what's actually sad about that. And
it
in like
is.
direct opposition, like you said, to the whole movies.
Message. The
Yes.
essence of the film. This is
Hello. 75%.
I mean, my only positive spin that I can really put on it is if it gets a number of people to go see it in the theater, then I don't know if I could say it's worth it, but because that's my big thing is that it really needs to be seen on the big screen. But yeah, thanks for nothing. I mean, I just feel like, wow, how dare they?
Yeah, no kidding. Like I said, unfortunately, that's not super surprising. But you're right about seeing it on the big screen. It's totally different. I never had until Tennessee. I was like, wow, this is a totally different experience. And because the movie is so old, it's not like seeing, a movie that just came out. People like know all the lines. My husband and I just kept like elbowing each other and giggling because people all around us we're like shouting lines or whispering lines to each other. We're like, oh my goodness, like you guys all know this movie. It's really beautiful.
It is. It is. Yeah, it really means a lot to a lot of people. And I hear a lot of stories like that, like, "Oh, I used to watch this every year with my dad and he died. And, I have to, I just miss him so much." And, it's not just like a frivolous movie. It's a big deal to a lot of people. Well, I don't know if you want to go there, but part of what I talk about when I introduce the movie, and I probably did it in Nashville, is the effects of World War II on the film. And then I read a few of the letters from the
Oh, I
soldiers.
would
So,
love that. If you're if you are feeling that, I know that you've been doing a lot of these
Oh, yeah, it's okay.
presentations, so if you're over it, that's fine, but if you want to, I think that'd be amazing.
This movie was, it just so many things went into it to make it, what it is that people weren't aware of at the time. But this was the first movie that Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart did after World War II.
Oh,
So
wow.
they had all this incredible success prior to the war. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and then Jimmy Stewart won the Best Actor Award in 1940 for The Philadelphia Story. So he was essentially on the top of his game,
Wow.
and then enlisted in the Air Force and was gone for 5 years.
That's right.
He came back, highly decorated bomber pilot,
Wow.
possibly with a little PTSD because he wanted to give up acting. He thought
Wow.
it was too frivolous.
I could
But
see
Lionel
that.
Barry, after all those experiences, seeing all that action,
Yeah, I could see that.
but he changed his mind. And Frank Capra
Wait, you made a comment.
was,
You said Lionel Barrymore, and then I
oh,
interrupted you.
so Lionel, yeah, so Lionel Barrymore and he were friends. And I think he discussed this idea of quitting acting with Mr. Barrymore, and he said, "Please don't. You can still reach people, and you have a lot to give as an actor. So please don't quit." So
Wow.
that worked. Yeah, I know, right? And then Capra, of course, was too old to enlist, although if he had been younger, he would have. And so he worked for the Army Corps making the Why We Fight series, which is an incredible, I think it's maybe 10 or 12 hours. It might even be on Amazon, documentary talking about why we're involved in World War II. And a lot of it, I haven't seen all of it, but some of it is incredible. The way he just talks about freedom of religion, and he goes kind of against the whole anti, fascist thing, but in such a brilliant way. So he was gone from Hollywood too, and also privy to atrocity footage and things of that nature that maybe Americans hadn't seen yet or saw much later.
You
So
said
when they came,
atrocity footage?
sorry, atrocity footage,
No,
it's
you're
my
fine.
mouth.
No, you're good. What is atrocity footage? You mean like
Well, I
war
would,
footage?
yeah, like probably more like concentration camp imagery.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think that took a long time to come to the American, general public, because probably, couldn't believe that that was actually going on. And, but he was there for all of that. So he came back. They came back different people, of course. Why wouldn't they? And there was a lot of insecurity on the set because maybe they didn't have what it took anymore to make movies. Maybe that was true of Capra. Then Jimmy Stewart had this insecurity about acting. And so my mother said she thought maybe originally it part had to do with her because she was quite a bit less well known. She was only 25 when she played Mary Bailey. And she had been mostly in these MGM kind of ingenue roles. And so Capra really didn't know who she was, but she was recommended. And he went to the set, the MGM lot to meet her. And then he knew right away that she'd be perfect as Mary Bailey. So anyway,
So you're,
yeah.
I forgive me if I'm confused or maybe the tense is mixed up. You're saying that she was worried because she was worried to take the role because she hadn't really done projects that big, or were you kind of talking about the future? Because I had heard before, and maybe I'm making this up, that at first the film wasn't super successful, and Jimmy Stewart had like kind of blamed Donna for that. And she, are you saying
Exactly.
that she, so were you kind of forwarding a little bit, like she kind of took that on, or were you saying that when she first took the role, she was like, "Ooh, I'm a little nervous here," because,
No, she was super excited to take the role, and but she said there was this tension on the set, and she wasn't sure what it was about. And she thought maybe it had to
Interesting.
do with her because she was just not that well known.
Interesting. So she
And
felt it
the
while
movie.
filming.
She felt it while filming. In fact, when it came time to do that incredible telephone kissing scene, Jimmy Stewart was not comfortable or ready when it was in the schedule. So he asked to put it off. Yeah. And so when he was finally ready to shoot it, they set it up, and he asked my mother if, she wanted to rehearse it. And she said, "Yeah, let's just jump in." I'm sure she didn't use those words exactly, but and they got it on the first take.
How
Yeah,
amazing is that?
I know. So when you think about just the complexity of that final moment, where they end up kissing and everything, there's just so many mixed feelings going on, and they were really inside of him as well.
I mean, and that says so much. That says so much about their talent, their commitment. It also says something interesting to me about Frank Capra, that he was willing to be like, we got it. And that
Yeah,
was it. Like, because
exactly.
I mean, I've never worked with a director who, even if I felt like it was like a good, like, I think we got, like, they want
Yeah,
safety takes, they want extra takes. They kind of
right.
want to just keep beating it. And you're like, can we just move on? So that's very interesting that he also had the awareness and confidence to be like, that was the magic. We're
Yeah,
moving on. Like,
yep.
it's very
Yeah,
interesting.
that's a good point too, because my mom said that he was the most demanding and satisfying director she'd ever worked with, and they did do a different take, different angle. He was just Like, but even the kids going down the stairs there at the end, I think they shot that like 25 times, you know, because
Whoa, so that really does
he
say
just,
something that one take was done. Wow.
yeah, exactly. So,
Interesting. Okay, so sorry, go on.
yeah, so my mother also, I mean, everyone participated in the war effort back in World War II. I mean, it affected, I mean, I even have her ration cards, even though she was
Wow.
living in it, you know, and one of her relatives I was speaking to and back in Denison years ago, and they said, oh yeah, most of what we, you know, grew and created on the farm, we had to give to the war effort. So
Wow, that's
so
different. I've heard before that, a lot of people during World War II were growing their own food, that, like the Victory Garden thing was essential,
yeah.
but I've never heard that before, that the food that they were growing was
Oh
going
yeah.
back to help the war effort. That's very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So my mother, you know, when she visited grandma and grandpa, she did bond drives in Denison, and she at the Hollywood Canteen, she danced with soldiers and had lunch with them and that kind of stuff. And then totally unbeknownst to any of us kids, she received letters from World War II soldiers. And it's strange that she never talked about it. I mean, certainly not with me because I was born later. But I think the war effort was so all-consuming that I believe once it was over, you know, people
It was
just
over.
didn't want to talk about
Yeah,
it.
no, that makes sense.
But we were after in 2003, we were going through some this locked closet, storage closet, and there was a trunk, which might have been the trunk that she moved from Iowa to LA in, and there
Wow.
were these shoe boxes full of letters. And at first they were letters from grandma, because you know mom was the first to leave, and she was
Wow.
so upset and you know nervous. And so they, I think
Oh.
grandma probably wrote to my mother, if not every day, every other day.
Oh, that's so
I know,
sweet.
I know. But in and amongst those letters were like over 300 letters from World War II soldiers.
Whoa, 300.
Yeah, and I think,
Wow.
you know, like I said, everyone participated in the war effort, but I think what makes mom special is that she saved the letters.
Yeah, that's
Because not,
amazing.
not many people did. Not many people did. So
Wow.
I have a couple if you would like me to read them, just because I don't know. I think they're important. I think it also takes one back to those times.
Yes.
And also, you know, there's just conflict everywhere. I
Yeah.
mean, and it's Christmas, and a lot of times our men and women, you know, in uniform can't be home
Yeah,
for
I
the
was just gonna
holidays.
say it's really it's like a time, I don't know, like we're going back in time, so I'm very interested to hear this.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
This one is dated May 5th, 1944, from Beachhead, Italy.
Wow.
Dear Miss Reed, we here on the beachhead had the opportunity of seeing you in See Here, Private Hargrove, and we were delighted with your performance. We have what we call the Tunnel Club, and we've elected you Miss Tunnel 1944. The Tunnel Club is composed of five lonely officers of this ACAC brigade. We sleep in a tunnel under the remains of an Italian villa.
Wow.
Congratulations on your swell performance, and we're looking forward to seeing you again on the screen. Sincerely, your five tunneliers, Joe, Hank, Big Ugly, George, and Jim.
Wow, we sleep in a tunnel.
Yeah, under an Italian villa.
Wow.
Under the remains.
Yeah, that's
Right?
wild.
Yeah. Here's another one. I think, you know, I think the studio heads came up with this idea of the pinup culture. And when I found the letters, I was kind of in between. I was trying to move to New York, and I didn't really get to them until around 2007 or 8, because I didn't want to move them. I didn't want to ship them. and I couldn't fit them in the car. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that I went back to LA that I could hand take them back on the airplane. So it wasn't until I sat down and decided that I would read them all at once instead of, this letter here, that letter here, that I realized how important they were and how my mother represented the home front and how important that was because what did they have besides these pinup girls to remind them of what they were fighting for?
I'm not changing the subject. It's just adding on to that. My husband and I lived in Singapore at earlier on in our marriage. Well, I guess that was like 14 years ago. Whoa, that was a minute ago. But we lived in Singapore and we weren't doing anything scary. We weren't fighting a war. We were just living abroad. And it was scary in the sense that, like, culture shock away from our family. We had to travel a really long time to get to Singapore. And there were time it was almost a little embarrassing, but it is what it is, where we would watch television shows or movies because it would make us feel connected to home, like seeing the language, hearing the inside jokes. And we weren't, like I said, we weren't doing anything that profound. We were just working abroad. So that makes sense. I can only imagine being disconnected from everyone you love, and you're sacrificing and you're fighting, like, to have that image, that idea to focus on and remember, like, why you're there, and to be comforted by that memory of, like, home still exists, they're still there living. I can imagine that that would mean a lot.
Almost like even they were like talisman or something that they pinned up in their barracks or whatever. So they
What's a
showed a few.
talisman?
It's like a representative, like a symbol, like a representative of what you're like culturally or what kind of vibes with you. And a rep and it's like a representation, almost kind of like a mythic figure. And so they had articles, there were magazines with articles about the celebrities and things like that. My mom was a little bit younger than like the Betty Grables and the Rita Hayworths, so and I think she really reminded guys of like wanting to come home and survive, and marry and raise a family. So, well, here's another one. This one's dated the 15th of July, 1944, somewhere in the Southwest Pacific. Dear Miss Donna Reed, out here we haven't seen a picture with you in it for a long time and decided that something must be done about it. Your acting out here is tops with both of us, and you always remind us of our girls we left behind. For a movie star to portray as big a part as our girls back home, we consider you the best. Well, out here, we don't receive the latest movies, but those that are shown to us are most welcome. Our life out here may be rugged, but with you as our movie girlfriend, I imagine we'll survive. Both of us feel that a picture for each of us would boost our morale 100%. Of course, the more pictures of you, the better. In fact, we would like to complete an album with just your photographs. Also, if you would like to boost our morale 500%, you could write us a little note. Whatever your reactions may be, we want to thank you right now. Sincerely yours, Corporal Bob Galchak and Corporal Bob Herb Bickelhaupt, Beaver Dam and Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Wow, what a trip. Time is so weird. Like, that was almost 100 years ago. Time is so weird.
And a lot of them, these couple that I read were typewritten, but a lot of them, like who
By
even writes in
hand.
cursive anymore?
You're right. That's exactly it.
And just the sentiment, and also just even writing to someone you don't know, but have this kind of fantasy about, and I don't know. It really had an effect on me reading them all at once because I realized, they weren't just writing to a, they weren't just fans. It meant more. And
Yeah,
it
when by,
really,
sorry, go on.
yeah, just was an essential part of the war effort.
Well, yeah, and by immersing yourself and reading letter after letter after, that's really like immersive to be able to experience, wow, like they all came at her and it's a lot. And who knows if she even saved them all? That's the thing. It's like 300 is a lot, but who knows if there was even more, you
There
know?
might have been more. Some of the guys sent pictures. Some of them sent money, like from Algeria. I've got this money from Algeria for postage. And they're
Wow.
all like this. They're not, cheesy or anything like that.
Wow. I mean, she, okay, you tell me if this is an annoying subject change or if this loops back in, but I don't think I'm making this up. I heard that Donna had a pen pal like for her whole life,
She
basically.
did. She did.
And did she meet her near the end? I feel like I heard they
Oh,
met.
God, this is so tragic. So
Oh no.
they started, well, no, they started writing when they were 13. And they're all these cool, like my mom drew the farm like from above. It's
Oh.
so incredible, like she was in a drone or something. It's really accurate, like the house and then the different parts of the farm and then like the terrain and some of the trees, but it was like from above. It was so, and then she has all these drawings of fashion, like she obviously loved fashion. So there's dresses and shirts and things, and they talk about that. But and one of the most fun letters, I don't have it right now, she had signed her contract with MGM
Oh my goodness.
for 8 years, and she writes at the bottom, she goes, "Biggest thrill, meeting Clark Gable on the MGM lot. Mickey Rooney asked me out on a date. I'm too busy."
Donna Bell's busy. She's got stuff she's working
But
on.
anyway, in some of the letters, especially as mom started the show, she went on press junkets to New York and things like that. And she and Violet lived in Pittsburgh, and so she mentions quite a few times, "I'm looking forward to meeting the gal, that I know so well." And they never met.
What? They
Yeah, they
never
never.
met.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is?
I don't. I guess maybe Violet just didn't have the kind of life that she could meet mom in New York, or mom didn't have the time to stop in Pittsburgh. I'm just not sure, but yeah, they
Wow.
never
But
met. But
that's
I got to meet Violet.
what? You met
Yeah,
her.
I did. She had donated all the letters to the Donna Reed Foundation, which, we can talk about at some point. And so that was about 15 years ago. And she only passed away 2 years ago, so she lived to be 99.
Wow.
But after she donated the letters, a year or two afterwards, she came out to Denison for the annual festival. And so I had dinner with her, and we stayed in touch. And yeah, she was great. She had a bunch of kids, and she but she, they never met.
Wow, but they wrote through Donna's entire life.
They did. I mean, of course, not as much when they were kids, but they did.
I mean, that's pretty phenomenal. And that's got to be very weird as a pen pal to watch your pen pal, like, I'm going to Hollywood. And then you're like, good for you, pen pal. And then they go, what do you mean you met Clark Gable? What do you mean you're doing? And then all of a sudden, she's Donna Reed. Like, that's got to be such a trip. That's my phrase today, such a trip. But, you
But
know, a lot of
no,
things are
it's and
trippy.
also that my mom like continued to write to her, right? Like she didn't, she was Donna Reed, like maybe she didn't have to. She was pretty busy.
But she had her. That's it's funny because I've thought of her a few times because I've had a pen pal for like the last 6 years or so that I've never met, and I'm like, it's like I'm channeling my great aunt, me and my pen pal. Maybe one day we'll meet. Hopefully we get to meet, but you know, that's so beautiful that you got to meet her.
I was so happy to meet her, and she was fabulous. She was really feisty, and it was fun staying in touch with her. Yeah, and it was great that she donated the letters. None of us had any idea.
Oh, you didn't even know till she donated the letters.
No, I didn't know that she had a pen pal or anything like that. And
Wow. So you said you were going to read something to me. Was it another letter?
I have so many letters, Nikki.
Oh my goodness.
But we were talking about Violet Lindsay. It's kind of funny
Yes.
that her name was Violet, right? From
I
It's a
love
Wonderful
that.
Life. Yeah.
Oh, I love that name in general too, but
Yeah. So she has a letter here that she wrote to Violet, dated March 11th, 1946. I usually read the last part, but since you're family, maybe I should read the whole page.
yeah, please do. Yes.
Let's see. My family is well and wonderful. Levon is here in California with me. Keith graduated from Iowa State and
Wow.
is now an engineer with GE in Schenectady. Billy Lee just finished high school in Denison, of course, and is waiting for Uncle Sam to make up his mind what to do with him. Did you know I have a 4-year-old sister named Karen Ann? She is adorable and such a joy to my parents, whose children grew up and suddenly left them. And that's the latest on the Mullingers. I just finished shooting Faithful in My Fashion with Tom Drake, and will go into It's a Wonderful Life opposite James Stewart, his first since he's back from the wars, within a few weeks. This will be my big break, I think. And Tony and I are ever so happy. So far, we as husband and wife have run into no complications with two movie careers in one family. He is a wonderful guy, and it is a wonderful life with 2 exclamation marks. Love, Donna.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, how beautiful is that? It's a
Yeah.
beautiful letter. And to anyone who's, wondering, in that lineup that she said, Keith is my grandfather. So he's my dad's dad. And I always think it's funny, on kind of a side note, that's not really a side note, that Keith was an engineer. Because my husband Dan, like my dad has told me so many times that there are very specific things about Dan that remind him of his dad. So it's just
Really?
funny, like patterns that families,
Yeah.
have and get into. It's like I married someone in some ways very similar to his dad. I think not in others. Dan is very spunky, but Dan is very much an engineer minded person. Like I said, kind of a side note, but just when you brought up Keith and that he went to school for
Yeah.
engineering, it just makes me think of my husband.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Uncle Keith was so sweet and gentle, and I just remember him being really kind of like grandpa, like not very thoughtful. Like whatever you talk to him about, he just never mixed words. He just was very pointed and thoughtful and intelligent. He was really fun to talk to.
What an
Yeah.
interesting family coming out of Iowa.
They all were, I know.
Yeah. And then it's
Yeah.
interesting that my mom is from Iowa as well. Like, that's just very
That's right.
interesting
So,
to me.
yeah. Yes. Yeah. So
And my dad
anyway, I
has his
think
origins there.
I like this letter because it shows that she's got a particular feeling about the movie before she goes into shooting it.
That's what I was thinking. That's so
Yeah.
wild. I think this is going to
I
be my
know.
big break. Like, you knew it,
Yeah.
Donna.
Yeah. But of course, the movie did not do well. So, I mean, in a way, it was a break, but maybe not as exactly what, she had envisioned because it didn't do so well at the time.
Now she lived long enough, though, to see it pick up traction, right? Because it really started picking up traction in like the 70s, if I'm
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
Donna passed away in 86, correct?
Correct. So we always had it on at Christmas. Well, not always, but in the 80s, it was definitely always on in the background during Christmas, because like watching anything with her from the Donna Reed show was like, oh, I don't want
Because she's picking it to
it.
pieces.
Yeah. But no, she was so happy. She was really, really happy about the fact that it was so popular. Yeah.
That's so, how redeeming is that to think, like, I think this is it, and then have it not like really be what you imagined, like, oh, it kind of flopped. And then to see like, oh, redemption. It is it. Yeah. It did. Yeah. People got it. They just, more people needed to see it. And you're totally right. That idea of like VHS, you know, on demand, DVD, all of that not being a thing. So it makes sense that like, if it's not, if it didn't all hit exactly at the perfect time, the perfect way, people able to, you know, being able to get out to the theaters, that it wouldn't have stuck. So that's amazing.
Right. Because when you think about it, like the audience, the film didn't change. It was the audience who changed.
Yes.
So I think it was too close to the end of the war when it was released. I don't think people wanted to see a movie about suicide and, you know, kind of depression era values and that sort of thing. And it is kind of a depression era film in a lot of ways. So yeah, people were kind of done with that, but it's okay. I mean, just what an amazing trajectory this film has had. And it just, the other thing is it just continues to grow. I mean, every year, and it's shown in more theaters. And like I said, you know, the audiences in New York have been mostly in their 20s now. And, you know, it's fantastic.
Well, like you said, it found a new audience, not only after the release, like shorter in the 70s, but even now it's continuing to find new audiences. And there was proof of that just when I went on YouTube and I searched Donna Reed, and I couldn't believe, I mean, It's a Wonderful Life as well, but even just Donna Reed, I couldn't believe how many people are still making videos talking about her and talking about the film and reviewing the film. It's like, it's still very, I expected honestly to see much older videos, not super duper recent videos. So it just tells me, okay, people are still very much invested in the film and even in her as an actress and the work that she did.
That's great. I did not know that. And that, it's funny too, because the one of the guys here who's the film programmer at the local independent film theater, and he's kind of a bah humbug type of guy. And he, you know, he's at 35, and he said, you know, when I saw that end scene where they all, the family comes together, you know, he's like, this is not a movie for me, right? Just too sentimental.
Yeah.
But when he finally sat down and watched it, there were so many other things that were so incredible that he loved and really respects and, you know, still loves about the movie. So.
Wow. Well, okay. There's a couple more things I want to talk about before we wrap this up.
Sure.
One of the things was kind of, and I don't even know where this is going to go. I just think I mentioned this to you, that it struck me as very interesting. And like I said, I don't know how deep we're going to go into this, but there's, you know, culture's changed a lot since It's a Wonderful Life came out, or since the Donna Reed Show. And, you know, recent years have been wild. You know, that was part of our move from a larger city to a smaller town, was everything that's unfolded in the last few years. And, you know, growing up, when I was a kid, I went to a private Christian school. And I remember we had this thing that would circulate in the school, like news from around the world. And they would just like talk about different things that were happening. And they would talk about, I believe it was in Sweden or one of a Nordic country, where they were legalizing assisted suicide, euthanasia. Mm-hmm. And I remember we talked about it a lot in school, as like, hey, this is a really big deal that they're starting to make this more of a part of like the medical system. And it's been really interesting because in the last few years, you know, it's become more accepted in other countries as well. One that's getting a lot of attention recently is Canada, because they're, from what I'm seeing and from what I can understand, they're expanding the parameters as to like what qualifies for someone to be able to have assisted suicide, to use euthanasia. So to my understanding, the parameters were a lot tighter in the past, and now they're kind of expanding what falls under the category of like, okay, we will assist you in this process. And, you know, I mentioned to you that I had been looking up numbers in Canada specifically, and it turns out it really is on the rise. There are more people that are choosing, to end their life. And it's really interesting because I feel like in general, I saw a commentator talking about this, how there's been this cultural thing throughout history of like, you know, don't do it, don't jump off the bridge, like put the thing, the net underneath, like catch them, we have to save them. And I feel like there's slightly a shift that's taking place. Like I said, that seems to me, even in looking at the numbers, like, oh wow, this is on the rise. And I think what It's a Wonderful Life does, and not only shows the contrast and how the world has changed, but I mean, this is what we've talked about the whole time, right? It really shows how, things can turn around, how a community can come together to support someone, how someone may not even know the integral role, intricate, integral, integral is the word, integral, right? Integral role that they play within their social network, within their community. And I think that that's why the film, like I said, speaks so deeply to a lot of people, because that's a universal feeling, I think. And it's just really interesting how the tides seem to be kind of changing in some ways. It's not something that's prevalent here in America. And I made an Instagram post on this recently. I don't know if this even matters in the context of the conversation. I'm not even saying that I am hard stop 100% against it. Like, we all know that there are times, like, we're animals, they're dying, they're on their way out, and there's an easier way for them to go. I lean more on the side of being against it. Part of it has to do with my faith. Part of it has to do with, I can't help but think that it feels a little sinister that the numbers are increasing for a lot of different reasons, not only within the medical system, but just like says something about the state of the world to some degree as well. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if that has to do with this, like we were joking about, this whole postmodernist view, this relativist. I don't know what it is, but the movie really speaks to that issue that I think is gaining traction and that is being talked about more. And I don't even really know where I'm going with that, or if you have any thoughts back to that, but that's something that really struck me this year when I was thinking about talking with you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know anything about what you're talking about. So I do think it is incredibly interesting. I mean, I remember back in the days of, Dr. Kevorkian. I don't know if you remember him or have
The
heard about
name
him.
rings a bell.
So he, God, I wish I had. I think he was in the maybe the 80s, but he, kind of started this whole notion of assisted suicide.
Interesting.
But
By the way, you can let your mic hang. It'll still pick up fine. Oh, because your vest is on.
it's
That's why.
freezing in here.
I'm so sorry.
No,
Then there
that's
you go. Yeah,
okay.
just even holding it sideways like that's good. But if it's
Yeah.
too close, it'll distort.
I know it's probably not good that I'm holding it
Yeah.
because
Yeah,
I'm it gets a little intense.
okay,
Can you hear?
yeah. So Dr.
So
Kevorkian started this idea, at least in pop culture.
yeah, and he was in prison, in and out of prison all the time, but he started this conversation and also was helping people, but he was helping people who were terminally ill, and at that point, and I don't know if the medical profession is much better, quite honestly,
Yeah.
it was, doctors do everything to keep you alive, no matter what.
Yeah.
So, for those reasons, I would tend to be pro. Because I don't like suffering of any kind,
Oh,
especially if
you
it's,
mean pro euthanasia. That's what you mean.
I mean, we do it, I mean, I don't want to sound crass, but it's great when you have an animal that's suffering or something like that, and you can end their life when you know there's no hope. And I watched, my mother, suffered terribly with the kind of cancer that she had, the pancreatic cancer that spread to her liver, and it was awful. So I don't know, it's a mixed bag, but I
Oh,
also know
totally.
in general suicide is on the rise, and I'm not, that is disturbing because young people, all this bullying that goes on social media and in real life, that I am not pro at all. And I, the whole mental health situation in this country, and that part is very upsetting, and that's a solution. I don't know what the solution is because it just seems to be getting worse, not better.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, I know we don't, nobody likes the phrase the slippery slope, right? It's a little overused, but it is kind of scary to watch if what I'm seeing going on is actually going on, right? These numbers that I'm seeing are on the rise, and that people are being allowed to choose that because of mental health issues and just other things that are starting to expand. Like I said, the parameters seem to be expanding. There's something just sinister and sad yeah. seeming about that.
Yes.
And it's yeah. just different times. And even like, and we're going to circle back. I'm not going to go off on this too much, but you know, it's like you were saying about medically assisted, you know, when someone is terminal or they're suffering, it's wild how those, I keep using the word parameters, but have widened. So one thing that I said in the video was sometimes this will happen where babies who are not born yet will be diagnosed with things and the mothers will be told like your child's going to suffer like this. And I know people. So this isn't just like stuff I've heard in the news. This is like friends that I have. And then people like second and third connections, friends that are nurses that have actually watched this happen, where then the baby is born and they don't have the diagnosis that the doctor had said that the child would have. So it's a very interesting conversation. It's like, man, how flippant are we getting with the idea of turning off the lights? Like, well, this will be better. So let's do this. It's like, man, this seems like a very extreme situation that is possibly becoming more regularly utilized. And I just think that's really sad, especially because I really do believe that a lot of people know what it feels like to some degree or another to want to end things. And once again, to circle back, that's what I think is so powerful about the movie, because I can't even think of another movie off the top of my head that really broaches this topic, that the whole thing centers around the idea of someone who wants to commit suicide because they are so down and out about the situation that has unfolded in their life. And then through the course of the film comes to realize like, what, like, no, things can change. Like I can get out of this. Look at my community. Look at the role that I play in people's lives that I didn't even realize that I played in their lives. And I think that that's a needed message, and that that's why the film continues to make such an impact in people's lives.
Yeah. I think you're right about that too. Because also first of all, just getting back to the medical thing, I mean, that's where statistics just really drive me crazy, you know, that because, you know, your baby is shown to have this, that, and the other, you know, the equation is this. Well, no, you know, everyone's different. And I don't really believe that. So that's disturbing.
It's super disturbing. I have a nurse friend that has watched abortions happen where then the child comes out and it was like, oh, turns out that that's not what the child had. And then the mother is obviously just mortified. So I'm sorry, I'm not trying to derail us, but it all kind of comes into the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very sad. And once again, I think what makes the film so relevant still now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really true that what is great about It's a Wonderful Life really does not shy away from any of that.
Yes.
And the darkness and everything. And I just think, I just recently learned that Frank Capra actually struggled with depression in his life, which I did not know.
Yeah.
So
that's not
because
surprising.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, when you think about some of the earlier films that are, you know, so kind of upbeat and spirited, and then his experience in the war and these other things, that he would gravitate towards this movie is kind of incredible. And
that is incredible.
It's just a very difficult situation we're in, because I just heard on the radio the other day, this girl, her parents took her into the hospital because she was suffering from incredible depression and she wanted to end her life. And they kept her in the ER section for like 3 weeks because they didn't have a room, you know, for her particular. I mean, this should take priority over everything.
Yeah, that's like a very interesting topic too. Just this idea of like, there's no longer really like mental health wards, or what were they called? The facilities I know that were taken out in the 80s. I don't remember what they were called. Just like whole facility. And I've heard why, I get why they were eradicated, but it seems like, well, what do all these people do now? And mental health crises are on the rise, it seems. So what are people supposed to do?
And I think that unfortunately in this country, the tendency is to medicate. And I know from talking to people that they do not enjoy how they feel on this medication. So, and that's not a solution. Maybe it's a Band-Aid for a few days or something, or, but it
I was on Lexapro for a period of time, and it really was, it's a good way to word it, like a band-aid for a period of time. It was helpful when I needed it, but I'll tell you what, getting off of that was a nightmare. It was
My
so
God.
difficult to get off of the
Really?
medication, like physical withdrawals. And it didn't solve the core issues, but it did help for the period of time. And to be honest, the majority of the reason I was on it was for pain management. So that's kind of a separate topic, because apparently I was told by the doctor when I was put on it that the same part of the brain that like feels depression is the same part of the brain that deals with pain. And she was right. There was a period of time where it really did help me, but it did not feel good after a long period of time, and getting off of it was really hard. On another kind of the last thing I wanted to kind of touch with you, unless there's something else you think of, like while I'm talking, is the Donna Reed Foundation, because I don't, I my memory escapes me. I don't remember the details. You're gonna have to tell me what the foundation does, how it was started, all of that.
Yeah, with pleasure. So, as we had mentioned, when mom passed away in 1986, she had bequeathed her Oscar to her hometown, to Denison,
That's
Iowa.
cool.
And also, unbeknownst to me, she had saved a lot from her both careers, film and television. And so we all went to, she passed away in January. And then in the summer, a bunch of us, including, the kid actors who were on the Donna Reed show, and a lot of friends and family, we met in Denison and we memorialized the Oscar to her hometown. And even though it was a sad reason to be there, we all had a really good time. There was something nice about Denison and the community, and it was really great to be there. So her husband at the time, Grover, and some local journalists kind of started thinking about maybe we should do more than just memorialize the Oscar. And they put together this idea of a Donna Reed Foundation. And it took a little while. I think it took about a year to get rolling. But we decided it would be an educational foundation and that we would give away scholarships to kids going on to study in the performing arts, especially because, mom, she just, as fate would have it, she ended up in LA. She got her, she won the beauty contest at Los Angeles City College, and that's what got the attention because her picture, her photograph was appeared in the LA Times. So she got all this attention from agents and such, and she put them off because she wanted to graduate in case the acting thing didn't work out. But she didn't really have any preparation for becoming a movie star. So the idea of creating an educational foundation felt really right to especially kids coming from the Midwest who, it's the tendency is mostly musical theater.
That's
And
cool.
if they decide to go to New York or LA, there's a lot more to it than that, as you well know. So we finally got the ball rolling, and my God, Grover ran the thing from his it's just a computer in his office in LA. But it grew and grew and grew. And we, after about the second year, we had this festival the third week in June. And these really interesting people from the business came from New York and LA. So we had a week long of classes. And then there was a gala performance, not necessarily the same kids who came to compete for, scholarships in many categories. We had dance, we had musical theater, we had vocal, we had monologues, and it was just an incredible phenomenon. In fact, I was a judge
college for a few years, and then the kids who came to compete were so good. I didn't want to judge anymore because I couldn't. Yeah.
Oh, because
Yeah, we had
true art, it's hard to judge. It's
it's
very relativist.
we needed professionals.
Oh.
So we have a few kids who've gone on to make it on Broadway, actually. And
Wow.
then after 9/11, parents didn't want to send their kids. There was like some downtime. So we're not doing the festival anymore, but we have a strong online presence. Oh, and in the meantime, this area was bought that housed an old German opera house. So we refurbished it. Now it's the Donna Reed Theater. It just turned 100 back in 2019.
Wow, how cool is that?
It's beautiful. And if
Wow.
and then there's an archive in the basement, and my mom's archive lived in many people's garages and homes for a long time, but now it's in a temperature controlled environment
Very
and it's in
good.
ex excellent shape. It survived. Then we have the museum upstairs, and then there was an old candy kitchen that my mom used to go to. I remember it when I went to Denison. So we've preserved most of that, and it's like a bake shop where you can get really good pastries and a lunch. And so it's like the Donna Reed Center now. And yeah, so it's incredible. And we're in the process of like restructuring it, but her Oscar is there. And if you go to donnareed.org, the website's really in good shape. And then last year was her centennial. So if you click on the celebrate section, you can see like a tribute video we made for her, and the governor proclaimed her birthday, Donna Reed Day, which was incredible because so grandma and grandpa, also ahead of their time, they got pregnant with my mother before they were married.
Oh, snap.
Right. And so her birthdays
Was Donna
were
the
always,
oldest?
yes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Sorry, this is coming back to me. I just
Yeah.
relearned that this week that
Yeah, I'm
we are
sure
both the
she's.
oldest.
Yeah, so I'm sure she was just mortified that I'm saying this, but because of that, her birthdays were always like this thing of shame, right? Because they came, less than 9 months after they were married. So, and then as a result, all of us, my sister and I, had these crazy birthdays, like, zoo animals and pony rides
Oh
and
my goodness, how funny is that?
So the fact that her birthday has now been proclaimed Donna Reed Day in Iowa, to me, is like, I don't know. I'm so happy.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. So anyway, the foundation has a wonderful website, and we're always happy to get new members. And it's really spiffy, and you can, find out a lot by cruising
It's
around there.
very cool. That's
Yeah.
very cool. So if a youngin is looking to get some kind of scholarship, do something in the performing arts, they can still look at the website and check it. It's still
Yes,
happening.
we give merit awards now. You just submit videos because we don't, we'll hopefully get back to having in person, but COVID kind of shut everything down.
Changed everything.
Yeah, so it's an online presence. You can submit your reel, but
That's so cool.
yeah, thank you.
Wow. Well, is there anything else you would like to touch on before we wrap this up?
Gosh, I think we covered a lot. I don't know. Is there anything you can think of?
It's hard because I could go in 12 different directions and like back up all the way to the beginning and talk more about your childhood. I mean, I could go every different direction. So it's always like rein it
Yeah,
in,
well,
Nikki.
the thing with the childhood is complicated because I certainly don't want to appear ungrateful, because in a lot of ways, we were so incredibly well provided for. But I mean, having, and even though my mother stayed so grounded and never let her incredible success and financial success change who she was, it's just a very strange way to grow up. It just is.
Totally. It seems like a very strange way to grow up. Just having that many people know who you are and dealing with the studios and then producing content. I mean, it's really incredible to me that they produced that show for
Yeah.
so long together. on their own. Like, that's wild. I can only imagine that it was a very unique upbringing.
I mean, she also, she had like all these families. She had her birth family, and you know, she helped my Aunt Karen got a partial scholarship to Stanford, but my mother paid for the rest of it.
Wow.
And you know, she took really good care of grandma when she came down with Parkinson's, and she was always finding out the state of the art, you know, medication and things for her to
I
be on.
Forgot that she had Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because you know that obviously Keith did.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
And she had her birth family, she had us kids, and then she had the show family. And that's, you know, that's a very intense relationship too, because they were together like all day, hours and hours. I have lists of Christmas presents to all the crew. And I mean, you know, she gave a lot to the world.
Yeah. Being on a set, people who don't work in the arts, I mean, maybe they could imagine this, because maybe it's similar to being in an office. I don't know. Like, when you're with people all day, every day. I mean, I've had set families, you know, and theater families, but not for 8 years. You know, it's like, that's, and I felt very close to those people, and very like, we created very unique memories, and like, the jokes are very specific, and you know, you're overcoming very specific challenges together. And so I always think that about shows that run on television for a very long time. Like, man, that is, I actually just got chills. Like, that's got to be next level. I watched an interview with you, someone else, and I think he was the guy that played the son on the show.
Yeah,
and he was saying that we were like, he's like, they were my family. And I'm thinking, yeah, I could totally see that. Like, 8 years, day in, day out, creating, laughing, crying, having fun, doing things over and over and over together. I can see that being a legitimate, you know, extra family.
Right. And also, you know, Paul and Shelley were only like 11 and 12 or something when they started the show.
Yeah, so they literally,
like, they were adults. Yeah.
Yes, they literally spent their whole teenage years on that show.
Yeah. Wow. So my mother was almost like kind of simultaneously their boss and their mom, you know, a different kind of mom.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So. What an experience. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't even know. I guess that's pretty much it. Like I said, I feel like I'm talking 12 different directions, because I really enjoy, I watch a lot of long form interviews. So I like the idea of like picking out the details and chatting through everything. And maybe some other time after we sit and think, maybe we'll have to have another chat. And there's anything else we want to talk about, if we want to go in deeper about things, even if people in the comments end up, people always leave very interesting comments. So people might say something that we're like, ooh, that's very interesting. Like, we should talk again.
Okay.
So guys, if there's anything you want to hear us chat about, if there's any questions that you have that I can pass on to Mary, feel free to let us know in the comments. It always, on a side note, it's always weirded me out that she died 1 year before I was born. Like, you know, I could have so close to meeting her. How old was she when she passed away?
Well, she was like a week shy of her 65th birthday.
That's so young.
Terrible.
Yeah. That's so young. How old are you now, Mary?
Well, I just turned 65, and I have to tell you, I just was really nervous. You know, I just thought, am I going to outlive my mother? I mean, I hope so. So,
I hear that a lot from people who lose their parents on the younger side of life, that there's something very strange about passing the age that they lived to. And I've heard before, I don't know if this is true for you, or I'm not even necessarily, I don't know. I like how I'm like ending it and then diving off the deep end. But I've heard also people say there's almost like a, not like a survivor's guilt, but kind of like, wow, this is weird. They didn't make it past this age. And yeah, just a nervousness around it in general.
Yeah. Well, I think the hardest thing, and I hope you never experience this, because my dad died
couple of 3 years before my mother, which is interesting. I mean, he was a lot older.
Okay.
So, but for me, I just felt my mortality like slammed up into my face. And I just thought, well, I'm not going to live much longer. And that feeling lasted a long time, probably 6-7 years. I just thought, that's it. I'm next. And it's also like your parents are your thing. They're like, they have all the factual information on you and when you got your tonsils out and who you are, and to have that gone. You know, I was still in my 20s when they both passed. So,
you were very young still.
Yeah. But anyway,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. And
thank you.
I can imagine that would be really hard, like you said, to lose that. There's almost like a grounding to reality through your parents, that when that goes away, I could imagine that would be hard.
That's very strange. Yeah. And I was pretty sick for the first year my mom died. After she died, I had stomach problems for a year. And I know, obviously it was related to that.
Yeah. It's life is wild because it's so beautiful. I mean, as I'm looking out my window, I've got this like beautiful snowy mountain in front of me. It's life is so beautiful. But it's painful, and it's weird when you hit those just moments. Everyone has different versions, right, of those moments of pain in their life. Not the same thing, obviously, but I miscarried earlier in the year. Yes. And miscarrying for me was one of those like slaps in the face where it was like, welcome to reality, baby girl. Like just realizing, like people die and things don't go the way you want them to, obviously. But on kind of a separate note, that's not really separate, it was a trip because I don't know, I was so sick when I was pregnant. And there's kind of this thought of like, oh, you just deal with the sickness. And then in the end, you get a baby. And it was a trip to be like, wow, I dealt with the sickness for 2 months. And then my baby died. And I didn't get the baby. I just was sick for nothing. And I don't really mean that, because I tend to sit in the camp that like nothing is for nothing and all things work together for good. Hey, baby, I'm almost done. Can you give me like a couple of minutes? Sorry. He can't hear you, but I'll tell him you said hi. So I don't tend to believe that things are for nothing. I tend to believe that things work together for good, but it was really like a smack in the face of like, yep, this is reality. And some people have kids and then their kids die. Like, so you miscarried, or some people lose their parents. Like life is also, loss. But it's also so beautiful. And that's, once again, sorry to be corny and tie it all in, but into the movie, like it's a wonderful life, and life is so beautiful simultaneously. And that's part of what makes life beautiful in a twisted way, right?
Yes, I agree.
Is the darker shades, they make the brighter shades so bright.
That's true. Yeah, very beautifully put. Yeah, I'm so sorry about that. But
thank you. But
Logan, I mean, this guy is incredible.
I know. He's so cute. He's a gift, man. I was very shocked when he showed up. I couldn't believe it. And for me personally, Logan is a big part of what kind of doubled down my faith in a creator, because it was the trippiest thing, Mary, to poop out a person, like to have a person, like, where people come from. I know where people come from, but then you like pull this and they look at you and you're all of a sudden like, these are the same eyeballs that will be looking at me. If this kid lives to be 50, 60, 70, like these are the same eyeballs. And like, you weren't even here and now you're here and now you have opinions and like, you make them known, and things you don't want to do and things you do want to do. And it's just, it's such a gift. And he's added a really beautiful color to my life. So thank you.
Yeah.
I love him so much.
I'd love to talk to you sometime about motherhood, because it's such a mixed bag. And I think that my mother even talked about that not all women should have kids. And,
yeah, it's a mixed bag for sure.
She wasn't all like, rosy about it all the time.
Yeah. I definitely went into it, and that's part of why I avoided it for a long time, thinking that it was just kind of like only focusing on the negative, for lack of a better phrase, like all hard, all. So I was kind of, I think, in a different camp than maybe a lot of women are in, where maybe other women are like painting it as butterflies and whatever, and then they have kids and they're like, what? Like, I was in the other camp, like, oh my gosh, too much, can't do it, like, can't do this. And then had a kid and was like, oh my God, nobody told me like how about the beautiful parts, like the parts that blow my mind because it's so sweet, you know? Yeah. So I had like kind of the opposite experience. It's cool. Very difficult. It's very difficult to raise a little person and to watch a person come online. Like, it's crazy. We'll yeah. have to talk about
and,
that sometimes.
Yeah. And like, why are we not trained how to do this? I mean, right? All this emphasis on education, this is the most important job ever. And you have a kid and you have to wing it.
I know, you know, if I went off on that tangent, Mary, I'd be an aggressive conspiracy theorist in this monologue. Okay, so right. That's where things get a little nefarious for me and I start getting on my, but I will just say, like, it's a ride. You know, if we're using religious terms, it's sanctifying. Like, yeah. He is growing me and refining me and teaching me and showing me a lot about myself. And he's also given me a lot of grace for my parents, because I've now been put in situations where I'm like, dang, okay, that's hard. So I'm grateful. I'm very grateful. So I'm sad about the miscarriage. But you know, just like we were saying, like that's life, you know, life is complicated, many shades. Mm-hmm. So on that note, I really appreciate you having this conversation with me. And it really is like a dream come true, for lack of a less corny sounding phrase. And I always knew we would get to do this, or I hoped, and it's very surreal that it finally happened. And I'm grateful.
I am too. Cause you know, I like you a lot. And I just love how you are changing and evolving and think things out loud, and you're vulnerable, and I really appreciate that. So I'm really excited about this too.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate that you say that. I appreciate that you were willing to do this with me. Yeah. I really like you. My family really likes you. We're sending you e-hugs and
Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas, and I need to come visit, and you know, we don't want to stay in Iowa, so who knows, maybe we'll become neighbors.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I hope that you stay warm today, and I hope that you don't lose your power. It's incredible that we were able to do this whole interview with like negative temperatures outside. Thanks, technology.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna end now, guys. If you enjoyed this video, don't forget to give it a thumbs up. If you're listening to this on podcast, feel free to leave a review. I will leave links down below that I get from Mary to the website, or if Mary wants her social shared, I'll leave everything in the info box. And that's pretty much it. I will, God willing, see you guys back here soon with another new video.